Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Hope everyone had a great week, and I hope you all have a better weekend to follow. I know, I'm such a creature of habit. Happy Friday. I hope everyone's doing well. And hello, Rex, and hello, Pam.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
You all be laughing at me. You saw me over here trying to figure things out.
I tell you, but anywho, Sal. Let's see. Yes, it's Friday again. These Fridays roll around pretty quick, I tell you. They roll around pretty
darn quick. When you get older, everything moves in fast pace.
You speak for yourself, Rick. Trying to say I'm old? Them fighting words. No, I'm only kidding. I am pretty old today. I'm feeling pretty old today. God, everything aches. It's terrible. Must be rain coming or something here. I'm not sure what. But whatever it is, I am feeling it. Yeah. So, let's see.
Kind of like
Alice
that.
Is,
I was old when the Dead Sea was just sick with disease.
Wow. Now that's pretty bad. Pretty
just
darn
a
bad.
Dusty.
Just a little dusty. I don't know. That's pretty long time ago, man. Pretty long time ago. Oh, my gosh. So, oh, my gosh. Excuse me. Terrible, terrible, terrible. What is going on?
Not much.
And we have to,
All's quiet on the southern front.
Well, this is good. This is good. It's kind of quiet here, too, thank God. How about you, Pam?
Well, let's see. The bear is staying in the woods, so
very good.
Yes, yes. I made a cherry rhubarb pie, and my daughter actually went for a walk with me today, and we conquered a big hill, well, Bigfoot. So, you know, all in all, it was a good day. I mean, you know, I don't lead an exciting life, but it's things like that that are good for me.
Absolutely. Well, that's, you know, what's important. It's not all the other stuff, the fun stuff or whatever, you know, that everybody else deems fun. It's what works for you. That's it. That's
absolutely
what I see. Absolutely. So, yeah, I don't know. It just was kind of quiet here for the better part of today. Very quiet. I went to, I was telling Rex, I called in, and I'm sitting here, and I hear in the countdown, and I went, Gene, you don't have a studio in front of you. So then I had to get the studio open, and that was an accomplishment. Thank God I gave you all the info the other day, because I was fresh in my mind. So then I got there, it's okay, and then I had to redetermine how to work on buttons, which is good. But then, I zigged when I should have zagged, and the whole thing went blank, and then I was trying to figure out how to get back to it. Oh, it's been interesting on my little end of the world. So I feel it's been a little exciting.
And it is. And I've had that happen before. There was one time Rex and I were doing an after midnight show. I see the common denominator here is Rex is always involved. Just saying.
Well, I can't see into it, so leave me out of that equation.
Oh, my God. It's just crazy.
The same thing happened to me before. And it put you in panic mode, but especially like you with just using your phone when you're like, it just, yeah. I completely understand. That would have been crazy.
So it just sounds just okay. So, you know, you just keep on going. Just keep on moving. So, so I don't know, but every time I move, I lose the studio. So, because it's a long story, but anyway. So this should be very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. So, you know, if you hear me sitting here weeping, just talk me through it. So I don't know. But it's all okay. It's all okay. Excuse me. So it is almost 10 minutes after 10. Excuse me. Again, on the Friday night. Life is grand.
10:10 till you do it again.
Something like that. Yep, something like that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Ouch. I'm telling you. So I just, I don't know, I keep looking at my computer screen and going, yeah, there's nothing there, Dean. Stop looking at that thing.
It's like opening the refrigerator and hoping that cheesecake that was in there 5 seconds ago suddenly appears.
Well, magic. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree with that theory. That is what it's like. Yeah. So, I don't know. It is very, very intriguing. Very, very intriguing. So anyway, guys and gals and everybody, I don't know. You got to tell me what you want to do and when, because, like, you know, I don't know. I'm just visiting.
Well, I got the pacing.
Okay. I'm happy to hear that because I
can. In the room.
I was in the room.
And I
okay.
sent you a copy.
Where?
On AC.
No. I can't do that.
No?
No. Well,
where would you like me to send it? Okay, I'm going to leave that one open-ended.
I can get to AP, but then I lose the studio. Or I can get
okay.
to the studio, and then I lose AP. So, you know, it,
all right, then
I'm not...
let's leave it in the background for now. So you can push buttons and smile at a blank computer.
Okay, I can do that. I can do that. Butterflies up as my...
You could also leave
oh.
comments still. Just saying.
I can?
Well,
oh,
yeah,
why
you
did you
can't
can.
Read them.
I didn't realize you said
well,
lead.
You
I didn't know
still
what
leave comments.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I
not
can.
That you have to. I'm just saying you can.
Well, I mean, you know, it's fine by me. You know, hopefully I can retain something
but
and I can make a comment.
It's up to you and Rex.
Like I say,
that
I just
works.
Hope I can retain enough of the poem to make a comment. We're gonna, this is a challenge for my old brain. See? But what we're going
to
try.
Wow, there we go. Back to the Dead Sea notes.
That's me.
Yes. They're all tattooed and scrolled out.
Just keep swimming. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, you guys just tell me what's happening there, and I'll try and work with you the best I can.
Right.
Oh, my God.
I got the first one up. It's called Yo, Keep Your Mouth Shut. It's called Cow Patties by Jack Tonkovic. To cow's surprise, pastures have eyes. Green grass cannot help but dazzle. If manure is truth, don't call me Ruth. Forsooth, methinks I'm mad. My flag flies at half-mast. My die has been cast. Cow patties make big brown bingo chips, and pasture bunnies do crazy backflips. Tulips grow from seeds we sow on those bovine patties, ho-ho. And when we eat that pink roast beef, we recycle the clover so sweet. And all right, Pam, this is in your neck of the woods. Cow pie.
It sure does. I told Jack in my written comments, I said, this poem stinks. And then, of course, I added the rest of my comment. You know, I really, truly enjoy when you can tell that somebody just downright has had fun, you know, playing with words. And that's what he did here. If manure is truth, don't call me Ruth, forsooth me, thinks I'm mad. My flag flies at half mast, my die has been cast. Cow patties make big brown bingo chips. Now that would be quite the game of bingo. You know, you remember that game where it was like there was holes in a board that was like leaned upwards and then you had to throw like bean bags? I imagine that. I imagine a game like that except for like with cow patties. And so I thought this was a really clever and just downright fun. Right. So very well done.
Yes. Brings new meaning to that phrase. We are in the Me Too movement.
So true.
Too funny.
Well, I'm surprised he didn't get any, bagels in here, bovine bagels. Yeah.
What are bovine bagels?
Well, do you remember Colonel Sherman Papa Potter from MASH? He used to throw around instead of horse shit, he'd call them buffalo bagels. Or amongst a plethora of other little tainty little tidbits. So bovine bagels works too. So does
That's awesome.
I think the surprise he didn't throw in frisbees here for the cow patties. Yo, let's play frisbee with a cow patty. You do that too, don't you?
Oh my gosh.
Games people play with cow crap. Nice.
Yeah. I will have you know, though, I have never actually seen anybody throw cow patties. So I'm just saying,
actually,
that could be one of those urban legend things.
Nope. It's been on.
They actually have.
Hang on, Pam. You're having a one-sided conversation. Rex just dropped. Oh, my gosh.
Uh-oh. Jeez.
So it's just. That's interesting.
Well, apparently, he's probably still telling me about cow patties and doesn't realize he's dropped.
I don't know. I don't know. He's back.
Oh,
hi, Rob.
He's back.
I got back.
You did. I saw that.
Yeah. Phil told me, she said, Pam, you're having a one-sided conversation. Rex just dropped.
Yeah, I got a little note. Just thank you for calling Blog Talk Radio. Have a nice night. Okay, thank you.
At least it was nice to you.
All right.
That works.
Barely.
You know, but I didn't do it. I did not do it. But I'm going to tell you what. Rex, you sit still.
What?
Pam, did you get my message I sent you?
I have not, but let me do that. Sorry, I'll try to keep more of an eye out.
No, that's okay, because we're going to stop her so I can be a little more functional.
Yep. Sure,
okay,
no
so
problem.
I'm gonna,
I'll be happy to do that.
Okay, Rex, don't move, otherwise we're going to close the show. See, that'd be terrible. pressure. Okay, I'm going to try and do that any second now. Okay, I think I'm here. Oh, my God. Okay.
What happened? It's awful quiet here.
You're awfully quiet, Rex.
I couldn't hear nothing. It was everything
That's
went blank.
We weren't talking.
I thought I got green.
Oh, okay. Well, because, yeah, Gene had me. We both hung up so that I could call back into the host number. And then she's going to call in the regular number. We just figured you'd keep talking or move on to the next poem.
Well, actually, there was no noise. I thought I was all right.
Oh, really?
I think I got beamed.
Oh, that is weird.
All right.
That is weird.
Well, you got this one, then.
Well,
The Mislaid Son by Kay Hartley.
All right. The Mislaid Son by Kay Hartley. And it goes like this. Borrowed pink plastic lawn seat, loud folk music filtered over laughter, the naked feet of friends tickling the trimmed grasses below, multicolored swimsuits, ice-cold beer like liquid rays, outdoor showers that spit, not spray. After a day on the weathered wood of a weekend beachside dock, I can still taste your egg yolk ice cream kisses, all of these memories melting in the mislaid sun of this summer. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. That was a tender moment of remembrance, like those egg yolk ice cream kisses bring up that nice flavor of French vanilla. And where was it? The folk music playing in the background and the ice cold beer. Sounds like party time in the summertime around the lake. Nice touch of a memory that still lingers sweet. What about you? What did you think?
Hold on. I'm sending out a quick question. All right. Oh, there she is. Okay. We've got Jean back on with us.
Yes, I am.
And, you know, I really liked this. I like when an ending throws you for a loop. I said that it was sort of brilliant brevity that shines summer and hope on the reader, then slaps them upside the head. You know, and it does do that, but it does it in such a way that it makes a real just emotional impact. First of all, relatable imagery. You know, you think back, you know, like how swimsuits are oftentimes brightly colored. I love that. Multicolored swimsuits, ice cold beer like liquid rays, outdoor showers. And all of this sounds just so beautiful, and it's so hopeful, so joyful. All of these memories melting in the mislaid sun of this summer, and all of a sudden it hits you that this was all memories, all something that used to be and now no longer is. And I think that's important to get a story across in a brevity, just very impressive, very well done.
Well, thank you, Ian. And welcome back, Jean.
Thank you. Thank you, Boy, if that wasn't an adventure. Everything's an adventure in my world today. I feel like a new kid on the block, I tell you. It is amazing. I can't find anything. Okay, but I'm getting better at it. Let me see. I'm in the room. I can see the room. Oh, God, well, I should never have said that out loud. Ah, you got it. Okay. Coming back now. By the time this night is over with, I will be there. I will have it figured out.
All right, Pam.
So I did not hear the poem, and I am sorry for that. But, yes.
Well, I figured
because you're
trying
to find phone numbers without seeing things. It's amazing here. So here we go. No, there we went. Oh, God. Did you miss me?
Can you what?
I'm so disruptive, aren't I?
Not at all.
Am I here?
I can hear you.
Am I not here?
No, you're not here.
She can't hear us. I don't think she can hear us, Rex.
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Have you got, wait a minute. Then I don't know the answer to that one, since we can hear her.
Okay.
I'll just tell her you can't hear us.
Hello?
I will tell her we can hear you. Anyway, you got the next phone yet?
There you are. I'm not gonna tell you what happened because then you'll laugh at me again.
We can actually hear you.
I heard. Actually, I was fine until Rex said, "We hear you," and I went, "Oh, maybe I should shut up then." You know, I figured I was talking all over by then. So I apologize, but here I am one more time. Oh, my God. Yeah. Pretty soon I'm going to put my head down and cry. Okay. So what do we have? We have Arcana Amour up next, Rex?
Yes, The Asylum by Arcana Amour. And, yeah. Pam, you got sound time for that.
Yes, we do. And here we go.
Madness, they say. But what is madness? The dripping of a mind through empty stairs that seeks some semblance of stranded sanity, left lost to languish behind peeling walls. This jacket of many straps confines me. It prevents me from plucking out my eyeballs that I may see beyond this shriveled shell to wander freely again through absent crypts. The sweet smell of putrefaction that spills from coffins. How I adore to see their glorious decay and sing to them songs of torment to please them through their becoming, and gently kiss a tender farewell to decaying lips. Is it madness to bring comfort to my silent friends? Their lack of objection and inscrutable countenance tell me I make them so happy, such joy I bring them. My copious collection of crumbling cadavers keeps me company. I hide them in the recesses of my bruised and battered brain, robbed of my freedom to rot in this padded room. It'll soon be time for my little friends to visit me. They crawl through the cracks beneath the door. Sometimes they offer themselves to me as sustenance. That soft squelch of juice that trickles my throat midst flailing legs that kick wildly in avid ecstasy. Their chitinous exoskeletons remind me of home. Why? Oh, why do they think me mad? I have so much to offer. They place cages over their heads, yet they think me mad. This place restrains my will, persecuting my profane practices. Or is it the world around me that is profane? I forget. Sometimes I wonder if I might escape from here, free to roam, to share my insight and inspiration with inquisitive intellects. Those who can marvel my ponders of wondrous wasted wisdom and see my true lucidity. For it's only my hands that visit insanity. These slobbering imbeciles scream their suffering songs. I hear them all around me. Poor, tortured, tormented wretches. They are the truly mad ones, not I. I am the personification of prudence. What's that I see yonder? That faint shaft of light from the door? Ah, yes. They left it unlocked again. If I can just reach. Such a struggle to remove this jacket unaided. Wait. Wait. Yes. One buckle undone. So difficult. If I twist this way, maybe. Yes. Another. If I kick, perhaps. Yes, another. I have movement. I think I'll wait till later to bathe my ears in sulfuric acid, to cleanse them and purge the sorrowful sounds of the slow. But for now, they've granted me my reprieve and let me loose. You see? They saw I wasn't really mad at all.
Great read, Arcana. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. All right, Pam.
Oh, I very much enjoyed this one. He's quite the voice performer. He reminds me of you and Frank with that ability to, like, act with your voices when doing a dark read. I love the use of the visceral imagery when he's munching on the critters like that, the rats that had come through the cracks. They crawl through the cracks beneath the door. Sometimes they offer themselves to me as sustenance, that soft squelch of juice that trickles my throat, my flailing legs that kick wildly in avid ecstasy. This had, on a technical level, wonderful flow and alliteration. I first took the ending to mean that he had been released because they didn't see the madness. Like he had, like sometimes people can be insane, but they can pass and will, you know, get, you know, sent out into the real world. But then I realized that as he was performing this and I was reading it a second time, that it's more about the fact that he escaped and believes in his madness that they have let him go. At least now that's how I'm seeing it this time. I really like these slobbering imbeciles scream their suffering songs. I hear them all around me, my poor, tortured, tormented wretches. They are the truly mad ones. I just love how deeply he delves into the mind of somebody who cannot see their insanity, even as they're crunching down on the bones of a live mouse. I just think that's absolutely awesome, and bravo on that performance. Very well done.
Wow, thank you very much, man. And Jean, what do you think of that bit of eeriness?
You know, I really liked it. I think that, you know, Pam kind of nailed it. It's great to hear, you know, another person who can do such a wonderful job with their voice and their words. You know, he really makes all of his rights wonderful with the performance aspect. But I thought it was wonderful. And Pam, that part you read was the part I wanted to forget. Thanks for bringing it up. Just want to let you know. but yeah, it was really well done. And, you know, I really enjoyed the piece thoroughly. A lot of strong imagery throughout. And just great work. So thanks, Arcana, for sharing with us tonight. Absolutely.
Yes. This was quite the Renfield on steroids comes to mind, along with a bit of Vincent Price, because he hits on that thought of being the personification of prudence, yet enjoys the sweet smell of putrefaction, of stills and coffins, and how he adores their glorious decay, and he sings to them songs of torment, and gently a kiss, a tender farewell to decaying lips. Yum, yum. And there was something else. Oh, my copious collection of crumbling cadavers keeps me company. Yeah. And then there was one really hit that soft squelch of juice that trickles my throat. Its flailing legs that kick wildly in avid ecstasy, their chitinous exoskeletons remind me of. Boom. I love the smell of putrefaction and warmth. Anyway, personification of prudence? I think not. You're a necrophile. But then again, everybody's got to be someone, don't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Let's see. I got
it.
Are you in the room, Jean?
I am.
Oh, good.
I don't know if we're
well,
how long,
have to
but
do
I'm
double,
here.
Do I? Okay. We got the next one up. It's called Ode to the Bard of Odes by Joseph Noon.
God. Hang on.
What's the matter?
I'll get my button straight. I promise.
Okay.
Listen, I thought it was safe. Okay, here we go. Yes. Okay, this is Ode to the Bard of Odes by Joseph Moore. Wrapped in thy tuneful theme, spirit inspired, with thee I'll wander o'er the shores, wavy silent stream, together in palsy penning, the singing birds meander, the shadow that can win, touch the tears of La Belle Dame Merci. Grace with the gods that weep for our sin in the deepest grass, beneath the honeybee, that we may taste the holy air and with fanny fly, with blushful hip cream. George and Tom and Apollo wait there as the London sky whispers serene. We write an ode to love, that lovers will gaze with ethereal eyes, and hear the nightingale coo the dove, my heart upon thy warm heart lies. My tender hand upon thy lips, we watch Luna close her eye. Tuberculosis stole thy life's eclipse. We rest with beauty, beauty that must die. Sleep, sleep, dear bard, amongst heaven's metal hung. End poem.
Great read, Jean. And let's see. Let's talk a thought. This is a thought to, please ponder and please enjoy the sights, sounds, and view of my ode to the great poet John Keats, 1795 to 1821. Young stuff. All right, Pam, what did you think of an ode to an ode? An ode.
I really appreciate it. This is beautiful. Absolutely. It's a wonderfully written ode. I like how his use of a very elegant, masterful language. I like that he reminds us that, you know, that Keats really touched a lot of people with his poetry in his short lifetime. He wrote of spirituality and he wrote of love and he wrote of passion and desire. And I really like that we may taste the holy air and with fanny fly, with blushful hippocrene, George and Tom will wait there as the London sky whispers serene. And then he brings us into he mentions at the end that as that we all know that tuberculosis, and I think he was like in his, wasn't he like in his 30s or something like that, like, or younger? I don't know. I know he was pretty young. Okay.
26.
Okay. Yeah, I knew he was. Okay, definitely really young then. I like that line, tuberculosis stole thy life's eclipse. We rest with beauty, beauty that must die. Sleep, sleep, dear bard, amongst heaven's meadows hum. You know, I can imagine, I honestly can imagine John Keats reciting his poetry in heaven. Beautifully written here and very well done.
Wow, thank you, Pam. All right, Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I liked it. I really thought it was a wonderful read. I don't know what was wrong with me in the first two stanzas, and then all of a sudden I kind of pulled it together. Just really well-written, beautiful imagery that came to my head. It was just lovely. And I think, as always, Joseph put together a beautiful piece. And, yes, a great... tip of the hat to keep. So nice work, Joseph, and thank you so much for sharing again. It's good to have you back.
Oh, absolutely. It is a sweet piece, and it hits on that note of the romance poets of the day. You think about Shelley, he died somewhere around this time as well. And she was just finishing off her Frankenstein novel. So quite the thought of what was alive back then as far as just those three by themselves, the thought of what they put out for the world to enjoy. And this is, it walks in that very same angle of thought, wrapped in thy tuneful theme, together in palsy penning, the singing birds meander. There's nice little touches of that which you dig into, a bit of nature, a little bit of God and faith, as well as we write an ode to love, that lovers will gaze with ethereal eyes and hear the nightingale, to the dove, my heart upon thy warm heart lies. A very well done tribute piece there, Joseph. Thank you very much. All right. Next up. All right. I've got Life in the Jungles by Scott Shuck. His napalm personality erupts in his concrete reality as he etches pain with his finger. What?
Don't you have a record? Don't you have a SoundCloud for this one?
Nope, that's down lower. Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. So my apologies.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Life in the Jungles. His napalm personality erupts in his concrete reality as he etches pain with his finger into the granite stone facade of his face. Downtown, his dreams wander by a polluted creek as he argues with himself about the weather in Vietnam, where the sun smells like mustard gas, but the rain washes away everything but the memory. And poem. All right, Jean, let's start with you, please.
You just know when I turn my head, don't you? I can't. Pam, you're going to have to go first. I'm sorry.
No problem. All right. Now, the only thing is, Rex, you're not allowed to say, wow, thank you, Pam. Got that?
Okay. Yes.
Well, I thought this was a strong brevity. To me, I thought the main message was it was powerful and it was emotive, and I really felt like the main message was that it was the sad reality of so many veterans who struggle with PTSD and being homeless. You really got the idea of the flashbacks from Vietnam, and I really liked as he argues with himself about the weather in Vietnam where the sun smells like mustard gas. Powerful lines there, wonderful imagery and metaphors, and very well done.
Absolutely. Kind of that first opening line hits the concrete note. Napalm personality, if that doesn't speak of internal struggles, I don't know what is. And then the sort of granite stone facade of his face, that which you don't show emotion because you've seen way too much to actually feel the emotion anymore. And I too had like that thought with the sun smells like mustard gas. It's on that angle again of napalm, and the rain washes away everything but the memories. Yes, nothing washes out the memories. Not of fighting and dying dirty. All right, Jean, now we'll come to you.
Okay, I can do it now. You know, this is a fabulous piece by Scott. It really does reflect the, I don't know if I would say the thoughts, but it reflects the pain of a veteran who is kind of stuck in this space. You know, he can't break free of the memories. And, you know, like his napalm personality erupts in his concrete reality as he etches pain with his finger into the granite stone facade of his face. Right there, it just paints a picture of this stoic and I don't know if I want to say angry, but angry person and trying to just cope with his surroundings. And then the second stanza there, I mean, it's an awesome brevity. It says a lot, you know. But when he gets down to, as he argues with himself about the weather in Vietnam, that the sun smells like mustard gas and the rain washes away everything but the memory.
Oh, if only Lorraine could do that, right? But an incredible piece, Scott. Very it packs a punch. I can say that. That's the best way for me to put it. So excellent job.
Excellent. All right, Pam, you got the next one. It's called Wild Honey.
All right. Wild Honey by Kay Heartless. My girl, she's long and lean, slick with sweat, sweet as wild honey. Don't take my soft top away. I'm a pollinator. I like misbehaving, floating on the sound of her curly waves. I need my broad to balance me. I need my love, my wild honey. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Jane, you up for a piece?
Believe it or not, I am. I didn't touch anything, so I didn't lose the page. this is a great piece. You know, it's got all the old 45s up there. It kind of shows you, you know, the thoughts behind the piece. You know, it starts out, my girl. I was waiting to see what else, you know, fell into place here. But a great piece and great imagery. You know, I thought it was just, I just stand here cracking up. Don't take my soft top away. I'm a pollinator. I like misbehaving, floating on the sound of her curly waves. You know, the pollinator line had me kind of chuckling for a second. But definitely, definitely a fabulous piece, and I liked it. So I think that was just really nicely done. Nicely done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, it was a fun read. It had that whole groovy, like Motown vibe to it. Totally could see this becoming a song with a few more lines. And I liked that second stanza that Jean mentioned. But, you know, I also liked how the end stanza, I need my broad to balance me. I need my love, my wild honey. Like, I'm the one, the misbehavior, the pollinator, the one who gets to roam around from flower to flower, and I want to know that I can come home to my honey. It's a very, like I said, I don't know if Motown's the exact word, but that's what comes to my mind. So I thought that was this is very well done.
Thanks. Well, Gene brought up the 45, so I'm going to hit on that angle, the sort of some song titles kind of drift in here. My Girl, She's Long and Lean, kind of hits me up with Long Tall Sally. Wild Honey is a song. I like Misbehaving, Ain't Misbehaving. So there's a nice little touch of music back from the day to play this theme out. But it does, it kind of walks in that undertone of sensuality without actually walking there. It just offers up the thoughts, and you get to take the drift yourself. Nicely done, Kay. Thank you very much. All right. Next one. Hey, it's Gonzo time.
It's Gonzo time.
You got the SoundCloud there, Pam?
Yep, sure do. Here we go.
One rich man in ten with a satisfied mind.
Jack sat bare in his wicker chair as his wild copper-colored hair covered skin unaware. All the while, a familiar tune blared in the air. Proud at his action taken, had he been mistaken and become complacent, Sleepy would have sliced him into bits like bacon. Still in his mind, he couldn't find the peace he desired, for he realized the design of revenge would not tire. No body, no murder, no evidence left, but also no way of confirming her death. He wished to be patient, debonair and confident in her defeat, but all he can think is, she'll kill me in my sleep. Scared by a cracking switch alerting someone else was there, Jack spied eyes through the glass with a fast blast of chicken He cracked the glass and approached with tact and fear.
I saw that. I know you're out there.
Jack spotted Sleepy standing alone in the woods. He fired a second shot to her chest, but it appeared to be no good. Sleepy tactically dodged each egg without a single motion.
Must be a spell or some kind of potion causing this commotion. I swear there's no way you're walking away from this place.
Before firing more eggs indiscriminately every which way, a new image of Sleepy appeared on display. Perplexed and confuzzled, Jack snarled and struggled to stumble out a mumble describing his troubles.
You're a ghost. You're just a figment of my imagination. I'm losing my goddamn mind.
Fear coiled in Jack, awaiting reprisals or the specter's denial, but nothing seemed to keep his shattered courage intact. For what Jack saw, if he had exercised discretion, was not Sleepy at all. It was just her reflection.
Hi, Jack.
The magic mirror suddenly appeared on the window facing his way. Realizing his mistake, Jack quickly turned away, but it was too late as Sleepy sealed his fate with a sword to the heart standing inches from his face.
Bye, Jack.
With a flick and a twist, Jack turned into a fountain with such volume an artist could speckle a mountain.
Money.
His unfolded flesh bloomed like a crescent, harsh, such a lesson, but he had to respect it. Sleepy glared at the mirror, expecting some dark irreverence.
We're gonna make a lot of money on that bird.
I'm gonna keep a hold of him. I need to make sure he has a proper home with someone that will use that wealth to help others.
Or, and this is a really good serious idea, we can beef fry the little f***er and then we can eat him. And nobody gets any money.
That's fair too.
Sleepy headed out the door as the record skipped its song.
Money can't buy love that's grown cold, love that's grown cold.
So, if a queen dies silently in her castle and no one knows,
is she really dead?
It won't be silent. I can guarantee that.
Unbeknownst to Sleepy, the queen sat in her royal chambers making wagers in her favor behind the political scenes. Elderly and stressed, her brow furrowed from oppressed anger, jealousy, and derangement still quelling over Sleepy's engagement.
She cannot be discovered to be who she really is, as long as that pointless quest of hers keeps her away from the governor's chambers. I see no reason to make her stray the paw.
But my queen, she has already killed
a bunch of useless, overpaid mercenaries. Do you know what the greatest thing about mercenaries are?
My queen?
If they die, you just hire more. I want this place swimming with them. When she does show up, and I know she will, we won't be unprepared.
Yes, my queen.
And as for you, your loyalty has been on question. You'll be handsomely rewarded for your services after you're released from your prison, of course. Only providing you bring her here. Alone and as ignorant as the day she woke. Now, one more time before I slumber. Say it.
Thou art the fairest in the land.
Great read, Gonzo. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And that ending bit of music was on the funky side, which was cool. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. Number seven.
I very much enjoy Gonzo's writing that he gives to us every week. His ability to add the twists and turns. In a story that, is about characters that we all know or thought we knew, and he gives it such a new spin. I really like proud at his action taken. Had he been mistaken and become complacent, Sleepy would have sliced him to bits like bacon. Wonderful wordplay, wonderful rhyme. I like the conversation at the end between the queen and the mirror. And, where the queen says, the great things about mercenaries, they die, you just kill another one, or you just hire another one, sorry. So I liked that. He really does a great job with the conversation. and knowing exactly when to deliver the punchline. So great timing, great conversation, always fun. And of course, I look forward to the next one.
Well, thank you, Pam. I did it again. Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, this is just a wonderful continuation of this piece by Gonzo. And he kind of teases us because underneath of the piece, I can see part 8 and part 9, and I'm going, okay, you know, so there's more anticipation going on for where this is going to end or wind up, not end, you know, and I'm hoping for that. Intriguing pieces all the way through, and I don't know how Gonzo keeps all these parts and pieces straight. I mean, he does a fabulous job with it. And as Pam says, you know, they're characters that, you know, we all thought we knew, but the background is a little bit darker than we anticipated. So well done, Gonzo, and thanks for sharing with us, as always. Great job. Enjoyable, for real.
Yeah, these are fun. Kind of reminds me of my twisted thought to the adult angle of Alice in Wonderland, except he's taken on a whole load of fairy tales. I mean, you got Sleeping Beauty, you got Red Riding Hood, you got Jack and the Beanstalk, you got the Goose of the Golden Eggs, you got all sorts of stuff running within his angle and thoughts, but as well as the play with the mirror, the queen, and the funk he puts in this Jack spied eyes through the glass. But a fast blast of the chicken's ass, he cracked the glass and approached the cat in fear. Jack, I saw that. I know you're out there. Jack spotted Speedy standing alone in the woods. He fired a second shot through the chest, but it appeared to be no good. Well, what are you going to do is have a goose crap eggs all over her? Well, that's not going to go very far. All she's going to do is get a little scrambled in the moment for it. Or she does what she did, which is lay that sword in your heart and twist it. That was a nice thought, a bit of a gruesome killing near the end of this. Nice touch. And I too, I'd like the back angle with the, all of a sudden, the mirror was in the forest with Jack and Sleepy, egging her on, so to speak, and now bowing, kowtowing to the queen once more at the end. Now off the fairest in the land. Yeah, I can't wait to see where these all go and who dies and who gets to live.
Yeah, it's funny because it looks like part 9 was just done 2 days ago. So if that's the case,
well,
then
sure
I wonder where...
He's got to dig back into the story, find out where he left off, make sure the outcome's coming, so walking the same scene and role.
Yeah. I don't know. We might not be near done. You never know. But we'll see.
True.
Intriguing.
Absolutely. All right, Gene, I got one for you.
Okie dokie, you trying to tell me something? This is called Noxious by Darkened Auras. Noxious fumes escape the moon, permeate throughout the land. Driven off in inhabitants except one mage who takes a stand. As particles of poison spores sprinkle down like blizzard snow, the darkness is encapsulated by an iridescent, fuel-like glow. The mage creates a barrier to contain the spreading, and so far it has worked, but the mage is not dead yet. You see he is in the middle. The barrier comes from within. So once he loses all his energy, the moon knows it will win. End poem.
Great, Eugene. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't you tell us what you think?
I really enjoy this one. I always like Darkened Auras poetry, but, you know, this one, I think it does a wonderful job of taking the image and putting parts of the image, but not just describing it, rather putting a story in it. And I find it really interesting that in this case, the moon has become an entity of evil. You know, I have to say, in all honesty, I think that's part of what draws me to this poem is because the moon is often used in romantic poetry or dark poetry, but it tends to be part of the setting rather than a character. And here, all of a sudden, the moon is the evil. The moon is creating this poison. And I love how there's a message at the end with the idea that when you're fighting evil, when you're fighting poison out there in the world, it's what you have within you that's your best source of energy to battle. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, ma'am. All right, Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
I think this is a great piece. It was an interesting tale to be told. You know, the first stanza is after Rosanna really wants makes you want to know what else is going to happen there. You know, Noxious fumes escape the moon, permeate throughout the land, driven off all inhabitants except one mage who takes the stand. It was a neat story about the mage who's taking on the moon. And it was left in such a way that you really want a little bit more, you know, because you don't want to, you know, see the bad guy lose. Or win, I mean, the bad guy win. And that's the way, it comes off to me. You see he's in the middle. The barrier comes from within. So once he loses all his energy, the moon knows it will win. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing from what I'm reading here. So, but it was well put together. The rhymes were good. The meter was good. And, it was intriguing. So great story here, Dark and Olive. Thanks for sharing. Definitely.
Yeah, it's that first stanza. Thank you, Jean. It's that first stanza which actually offers up the truth to the moment. One mage who takes a stand, that last line, it offers up. Yes, you see, he is in the middle. The barrier comes from within. So once he loses all his energy, the moon knows it will win. So the idea is that even in the face of death, there is a time for you to make a stand and show the world, the moon, or whatever the thought is, that in death, that something good can come from what you are doing, even the sacrifice, the note to, hey, I'm doing this for the betterment, and there should be someone down the line that follows suit to make this a better place in time. Thank you, Darkin.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dan, this one's for you.
What's that? How?
This one for you.
Muse is up and gone by Poeta da Cabra. Smoke-covered walls and sand-covered floor, walnut chair empty, poet sits there no more. Liver and kidneys shot from whiskey and wine, left very quickly, leaving silver typewriter behind. Wife up and left him, followed soon by his muse, thought he was hard as granite before the bad news. Shared champagne and chocolate long time ago, sunshine turned to mist, she became cold as snow. Not long after she and muse left, he also shot through, perhaps to the sea, salt and sand, a catch a salmon or two. Sad to see him no more sitting at his mahogany desk. If he can't wipe the slate clean, I still wish him the best. End poem.
Gregory Dan, thank you very much. A little bit different, right, from Poeta. Something not his usual fare, but that's cool. Jean, how about you? What do you think?
You know, I thought it was a great story, great tale told. I think it was I'm not sure which came first. You know, the chicken or the egg again with the image of the at the top of the poem. I think that, but it was really well done and clever take on that if it was the image first.
and I see that there must have been a word bank because there was a list of colors at the bottom he said that he had used. I think it was good. I think it was a great share for tonight and clever work. So, way to go, Poeta. Absolutely.
Thank you. All right, Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, well, first of all, wonderful use of the word bank there. It made me think of Hemingway, but I liked how, it kind of throws you off a bit, and I like that because you first think that the poet actually died, and then at the end you realize he didn't die. His love for poetry died. You know, his wife left him, his muse left him, and he just decided instead of going for the pen and paper, he was going to go fishing. So, just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Actually, I had this very same thought, the idea of Hemingway at the back end of his writing days. It was just kind of hints at that because you perhaps to the sea, salt and sand. There's a note there of Hemingway's life on the sea, so to speak. The thought of a liver and kidney shot from whiskey and wine left very quickly, leaving silver typewriter behind. There is a note of sadness in that. The wife up and left him. That hits on a different type of note, but the thoughts that he's running along in this piece itself. And if you can't wipe the slate clean, I still wish him the best. Wiping the slate clean, that's a hard thing to do unless you actually take the time to follow through and make it a permanent vacation, so to speak. That I still wish him the best is a note to not just the one who's given up totally and moved on to something else because he feels he's got nothing left, but it's on that note, even if he chooses an alternate leaving, so to speak, there is still that note to, hey, it was grand while it was lasting, and I wish you a fair season following winter. All right. We've got No Tears, Yes Drums by Alan White. Another enormous engine stills, a great player now absent the cockpit. The living force behind that shiny gear sends the stage, navigating the intricacies of progressive rock with a flair of grace and precision that lasted decades down the line. Once a Beatles session hand, Alan helps to shape Imagine and Instant Karma for Lennon and the Plastic Ono Band and pumps some holy steam into George's All Things Left Hand. Mr. White Sticks took him from England around the world with Yes, juggling time and forward motions, playing tales of topographic oceans, and Yours is No Disgrace. Even Bach would agree, wouldn't he? That rhythm rules the song after hearing drums like Siberian Catcher and a smooth take on Roundabout, too. He kept the music joyful, playful, upright, hard, and tight. Thanks for sharing your adventure and your good time, Alan White. End quote. All right, Pam, why don't you kick it off?
Well, first of all, that was a great read there, Rex. I have to say, I am really glad that this one finally got an opportunity to be read on a show. I thought as far as your Alan White tribute contest, not tribute, but, your Alan White contest, I guess it was a tribute contest. This it has my vote for being one of the top placers. Not that my vote matters, but I'm just saying because it's a wonderful, heartfelt tribute. Even the title, No Tears, Yes Drums for Alan White. The idea that, Alan White spread, joy with his music, and we shouldn't be crying. We should be continuing that joy, continuing that music. he's got that attention to detail where, like, where he mentions once a Beatles session hand, Alan helped to shape Imagine and Instant Karma for Lennon and the Plastic Ono Band. And even Bach would agree, wouldn't he? I thought that was great humor. And I think definitely true that rhythm rules the song. And hearing drums like the Siberian Kutra and a smooth take on Roundabout too, he kept the music joyful. And, you know, to me, I think that is so true. And I do really feel like, you know, he's not up there in the front, but the drummer, oh my goodness, the drummers are always such an important part of every band. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I've read that that drummers tend to have the highest IQ of the band members because of the repetitive, like the patterns that they have to memorize. Might not be true, but I read that before in like some music website. But anyways, I really thought this was a top-notch tribute, right, and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And it's the timing. They do a lot of things, like especially with Yes. He was doing the progressive angle, but it'd also be bits to classic music along with jazz and little bits of folk. Plus, you got electric and unelectric in the music itself. So there's also the signatures and timing beats are all a little bit different, and you got to keep a mind for that as you roll through, because a lot of their songs were very long. I mean, their longest one was about close to the edge of the 18 and a half minutes. They covered one side of an album. So that takes in the, especially when you move from one, because their songs kind of hit on the sort of like an opera. You get little bits of a slow, it go, then tempo gets built up to a high point, and then it morphs into a little sidetrack, and then it slows down a bit more. And there's a nice ebb and flow within their music, which kind of elicits everything in the mind itself, takes you on a little trip. And if you don't pay attention, you miss some of those little neat tricks they drop into the music itself. Yeah, this was a great piece, too. I mean, dropped in everything from the Georgia and John to, Tales of Topographic Oceans. That was one of their double albums. Gorgeous, No Disgrace was a Roundabout and Siberian Catcher were always standouts for the concerts. And I could get to see them in 74, I think it was, somewhere around there, right before Rick Wakeman left. Anyway, Gene, how about you? What did you think?
Well, I think this was a great tribute piece. I have to agree with Pam and yourself, you know, on a lot of the pieces and parts of it. I thought it was just really well put together. And, again, another good tip of the hat tonight. I like it, you know, those places. You know, Mr. White Sticks took him from England around the world with Yes, Juggling Time and Forward Motion, Playing Tales of Topographic Ocean, and Yours is No Disgrace. You know, and then it goes on to even Bach would agree, wouldn't he, that rhythm rules the song. After hearing drums like Siberian Catru and a smooth take on Roundabout too. Just a really great, you know, the piece isn't overdone. It's not, you know, real thick and long and, you know, whatever. It says just enough to really drive it home. And I thought it was just a great job. Stephen, it's really well done.
Thank you very much, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Pam, we're going to do Digging by Naomi. And you guys sound sad for that.
We don't. It'll have to have a reader.
Oh.
I saw Naomi in the room. Is she calling or not calling?
I don't know. Good question. Says, juggling between listening and bored. So I don't know.
Excellent. Yeah, I don't either. That's what I'd ask, because I just saw her.
That is a good question.
And let's... Yeah. Let's do Ligeia, Hell's Bells by Florida Picasso. You got time for that?
Yep.
There we go.
All right. And here we go.
I cannot for my soul remember how, when, or even precisely where, I thus became acquainted with the Lady Ligeia. Long years have since elapsed, and my memory is feeble through much suffering. From my mere admission, I have never known such a woman as Ligeia, the once beautiful stranger I met in the ancient decaying city near the Rhine. For she is the haunting image of the radiance of an opium dream, or an unrelenting episode of another horrible hallucination. I dream about a stricken mortality, of a fragile body, the daunting murmurs of her gasping breath within the cerements. As she rises from the dawning sleep of a subtle and charnel abyss, and the midnight rain then accompanies the flashing lightning. Echoic sounds of eerie winds blow forcibly the fire of unbridled terror. The cackling crows hover above the protruding edge of the roof. The ghastly steps of a restless soul walk upon the nocturnal earth as a shuttle, like a black cat searching for the lover that had caused the dripping teardrops. She stands there before the door, drenched in the pouring rain, emaciated with her flowing raven hair illuminated the lambent glow of her eyes. A wretched prisoner of a broken illusion, desolated in the moral storm. The death knell of doom resounds the tintinnabulation of the metallic bells, and I bear witness to the dreadful corpse of my beloved Ligeia. For she lives. For she lives. She lives. She lives. No. No. Can you hear her breath?
Great read, Frank. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Gene, why don't we start with you?
We are just full of drama tonight. This is great. A wonderful piece, Frank. Well-worded, well-delivered. Just a lot of really great lines and imagery throughout this. I kind of like how you broke it down into the couplets throughout. I think it gave each couplet a top of its own, you know, just, how do I say it? You kind of put it out there and gave people time to digest before you go into the next one. And I think that really had a good impact on the piece. So nicely written and, as I said, nicely delivered, Frank. And thanks so much for sharing with us. Excellent.
What about you, Pam?
Yeah, I really like this. Again, another wonderful performance from Frank. I really agree with and like what you had to say, Gene, about how having this in mostly couplets allows the reader time to digest like little tidbits. I also think that the nice thing about doing couplets is the way I think for poets to challenge themselves, because you really have to carefully choose each word. I thought this was a wonderful Edgar Allan Poe-inspired write. I really like the ghostly steps of a restless soul walk upon the nocturnal earth as in shadows, and emancipated with her flowing raven hair and illuminated with the lambent glow of her eyes, a wretched prisoner of a broken illusion, desolated and the morrow's dawn. It's like all the ghosts that come to haunt you at night, the past and everything. And then all of a sudden, in the rising of the sun, it all just bursts into flames. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I think he had to do the couplets because of that center section. It needed to be fitted out, parted out, so the you get the full image of the scene set, the midnight rain, the flash of lightning, and then the echoing sounds of the eerie winds give that choir of terror, the cackling crows. Each of that comes with a touch of noise and sound that needed its separation. And to run them all together would have been fine on a long storyline, but to run that the way you did with the rest that he had in here added to that eeriness, that almost haunting feeling that you got from the piece, which was a little bit different from most of his horror pieces. This is definitely one of the better ones as far as the layout, the voice used, and what he dug into. Does it hit on that which is eerie, something that kind of speaks to the creepiness that lies beneath the skin crawling on your arms, especially when you get back to the, and I bear witness to the dreadful corpse of my beloved Ligeia as she comes crawling back through the door, so to speak. Because you've got that nice touch of who and what she was up front, the beauty, and then the bottom end, you've got this emaciated thing walking through the door. So the story works really well from start to finish. Nicely done, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We've got Loneliness by Weaver. You got a sound cloud for that one, too. Yes, no, maybe. Am I here?
You're here.
Pam, are you
here?
What
happened to Pam? She's not.
Yeah, I don't know where she's at.
In the meantime, I'll put up another piece until she comes back.
I didn't see it be right back, which is unusual, so I don't know what's going on.
All right, let's go with... We're going to go with Clouds on Airstreams by Daniel Deschino. And the dudes, lives drift in and out of bonding proximity as clouds may float on airstreams alike. Clouds grow and shrink, merge and separate, join in mass to dominate the sky and dissipate to leave nothing but a view into eternity. And what do I see? Shapes to bring back childhood fancy, weather patterns to fit my need, or nothing. And as people merge and grow and flow, separate and dissipate, what do we see? What shapes are we looking for that aren't really there? Within history, among presents, I have yet to bear witness to two humans the same. End poem. What do you think about that, Jean?
That is a good piece by Dan. I short for him. You know, this is basically a brevity compared to what I'm used to seeing him add to the boards. You know, he's a great thinker, Dan is. He does. He thinks wonderful things. Lives drift in and out on bonding proximity. As clouds may float on airstreams alike, clouds grow and shrink, merge and separate, join in mass to dominate the sky and dissipate to leave nothing but a view into eternity. Great lines there. But then I did like, and what do I see? And then it goes into shapes to bring back childhood fancy. You know, because I don't know how many of us have in our youth. Well, I still do it now. I assume I'm not the only one. You know, looking up at the sky and looking at the clouds, seeing the formations and
you know, the trails that the planes will leave when they shoot through and all that stuff. And, you know, you can't help but, you know, really, I don't know, I find it very relatable like that. Let's put it that way. And it was well stated and well worded. And, yeah, just a really nice piece. So great job, Dan, and thanks for sharing with us.
Oh, absolutely, because we are very visual. We see and notice things in that which is not really there, but we see the Jesus on a piece of toast. We see those images. Our mind makes that connection because we are visually when it comes. We are very visual when it comes to knowing and understanding things as well as people themselves. So this kind of walks on that notion of two separate parts, but they walk in the same language. That note, the first path, walks through almost the muse of cloud staring. And then that thought right in the middle shapes to bring back childhood fancy, weather patterns to fit my need or nothing. And then the second, it's on the cloud theory, again, but applied to people. And even within that same thing, within history among present, I have yet to bear witness to two humans the same, which goes the same way with the clouds. They float on air streams. They dissipate, they grow, they shrink, just like people do. And it's kind of a different twist of akinning clouds and people in the same sentence, but it does walk that little tidbit of thought that works very well. Thank you, Dan. Pam, you back?
I am. I meant to time that a little better, but that didn't quite work. I'd like to, first of all, welcome Michael Mass, to the show. Welcome, Michael. Oh. Glad you could join us.
Hey, Michael. Yes. Hello. Hello. Hi, everybody.
Hello, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a while, but every time that I come on here, I always enjoy it. I enjoy sharing what my talents or whatever you want to call it with others, and also getting the opportunity to review other people's poetry.
Nice. Just good to have you. Absolutely.
And Rev, I don't know if you noticed or not, but Naomi did say that somebody could read her poem.
Okie dokie.
Okay, well, I'm going to read it myself because, I don't know,
you better read it.
Okay,
I wrote
Michael,
it.
You're gonna
you want me to read it?
Well, hang on a sec. Do you, can you send us a copy so we can actually follow with you?
Rex, I put my poem already on the board.
Okay, let me go grab it.
Okay. Let me know when everyone's ready, I guess. I don't know. I'm still kind of new to this in some ways.
Okie dokie. And there we go. Go ahead, Michael.
Everybody see the poem that's titled Never Giving Up on You?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
You're prone to get discouraged when things don't go your way. Now you need to listen up. I have a lot to say. You have so much potential and likely to go far. I have seen with my own eyes just how gifted you are. But you need more confidence, a chance to take the lead, and each opportunity to go on and succeed. Do not quit or stop and sit. Stand up and move along. I'm not giving up on you. My faith in you is strong. Never giving up on you. I'm a persistent man. I'll always be by your side. Consider me a fan. There were times when you were low. Something inside you died. It's time to reanimate what once was dead inside. Your spirit is beautiful. Your aura is calm and true. Your essence is wonderful. It's hard to not like you. It was tough to watch you fall, but you have shown you've grown. Never giving up on you. I'll be your stepping stone.
Great read,
Thank
Michael.
You.
Thank you very much. And Pam, why don't we start with you?
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you could call in to read your poem, Michael. You know, on a technical level, this definitely has great rhyme and flow, a nice consistent rhyming pattern, and I like that. I really like that this is about noticing somebody, both somebody's strengths and weaknesses, that you notice that they fall, that they have their times where they struggle, but you also notice that they have this strong, caring personality. And I like that you use stepping stone at the end. I'll be your stepping stone. In other words, I'm not going to be a doormat. I'm not going to, you know, you're not going to be stepping all over and over again, but I, to help you through this struggle, whether it's addiction or whatever struggle this person is going through or depression, you know, you're there for them, but without the whole idea of constantly being stepped on in a, you know, metaphorical way. So just an excellent write, Michael, and very well done.
Thank you.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. Jean, how about you?
Michael, I thought this was a great piece. You know, what I got from it visually in my head was just someone's hand on your back saying, you can do this. You know, and I'm not sure if that was the ultimate intent, but just taking it down to just something simple like that to me was awesome. You know, the words of encouragement and the supportive attitude behind it is excellent. The fact that, you know, you want to, the stepping stone to me was like, here, let me help you step up from where you're at right now and to move forward, to you know, face things differently and to make a go of it. So I think it was a wonderful poem of encouragement. Nice job.
Thank you, Jean. And I'll second that too, Michael. But I do have one thought. This hits on a note of maybe three people. A father to a son, could be a teacher to a student who sees promise, but it also could be a friend and not an equal friend. This friend kind of speaks with a little bit more age and wisdom under the belt. So I'd say if this was a friend, this is someone who's probably 2, 3, 4 years older than the individual. So there's a little bit of knowledge behind the voice itself. It does walk as a friend. But I could see, too, it might also be a priest offering up those words of encouragement. But although I'm more tempted towards the teacher, the father, and the friend outside the priest. But it does hit on that note of trying to be that touch of mentor to offer up the idea of, yes, you do have what's needed, what it takes, but you haven't realized proper potential in the moment, which boils down to that thought you give in the third stanza. You need more confidence, a chance to take a lead, and each opportunity to go on and succeed. So once you hit on that first note of success, you build a bit more confidence, and there you hit on that notion. You don't quit on it. You keep going. Even if you fall, you pick yourself up. Don't let the bite of pain disillusion you as to what you're doing. Otherwise, you'll never do it to begin with. So this is a great note of encouragement. And that sort of I'll be your stepping stone. It hits on that note of I'll be your guiding light, so to speak, the one you can come to if you've got an issue that needs to be threshed out.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. No, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate the feedback. Yes?
It's our pleasure, Michael.
Absolutely.
All right.
Good night, Frank.
Oh, Frank left us?
Well, he says he has to go. Buenas noches. Good night. It was a great show. Thanks, Frank. Stay out of trouble.
All right, Pam, we're going to go to, let me grab it. We're going to go to Loneliness by Weaver, and you've got a sound cloud for that.
Yes, here we go.
I find loneliness is a state of mind, not a lack of company. How can I be liked by others when even I can't tolerate me? How can I miss what I've never had, relate though I've never lost? Feel cheated by a life I've never lived, I may as well be a ghost. I'm afraid of what I don't know. I'm closed and have no faith. I've avoided the world and all it holds. I may as well be a wraith. I float, spin, there's no anchor. Try to keep me in chains if you dare. If you have to hold me down by force, I may as well not be here. There's no life, faith, or passion. I have no dreams, love, or ties. A wraith, a ghost, a passing thought, who's born, who breathes, then dies.
Great read, Weaver. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Michael, why don't we start with you? What do you think of Loneliness?
Well, this is a very good poem, very expressive and thought-provoking. It brought up a lot of emotion, and I think
the style was original, right?
The style, yeah, this is an original poem, and it felt original. It felt no cliches or anything. I just felt it very it was well written and constructed. And I liked it. That's my opinion. I think the poem was great.
Excellent. Thank you, Michael. Pam, how about you?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that first line really, not the first line, but, where was it? It is the first line. Yeah, sorry about that. I find loneliness is a state of mind really sets the tone for the rest of the poem, and the idea that we're in this world so busy with social media, so busy with activities, and, you know, we have a lot of people you can check off on your friends list, your almost friends list, and at the same time still feel like you're completely alone. I really like the imagery of I float, spin, there's no anchor, try to keep me in chains if you dare, if you have to hold me down by force, I may as well not be here. Those lines speak to me volumes about that, the desire to be an individual, to be able to think for yourself. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
You know, what a great piece, you know, loneliness of all, you know, you look at the title and you go, okay. But I mean, this kind of rides a little bit deeper than that, you know, it's, you know, having that sense of where you don't belong. I mean, that's even, you know, a little bit deeper than just being lonely. But this last couplet, there's no life, faith, or passion. I have no dreams, love, or ties. A wraith, a ghost, a passing thought, who's born, who breathes, then dies. You know, it's like there's just an emptiness there, a complete void, which is sad. It's very sad to just feel like there's no reason. You know, there's just no reason. I'm just passing through. And when I'm done, it's done. So great job, Weaver. And as always, you know, great audio. And I want to thank you for sharing that with us. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jean. There's an extreme disconnectivity in this, a desolation of spirit, mind, body. And the question is kind of hit on the same thought. How can I be liked by others when even I can't tolerate me? How can I miss what I never had, relate, though I've never lost, feel cheated by life, I've never lived? the disconnect in that is someone who doesn't want anything to do with anything or anyone yet holds that note to try to keep me in chains if you dare. If you have to hold me down by force, I may as well not be here. So there is some kind of connectivity, even though the thought is being supremely disconnected. And the idea from that, I guess, is fear. The idea that they've got so little in self-confidence and thoughts for themselves that they're willing to shut themselves off from the world rather than try and find any singular connection that would bring them into the world yet. So offer up that thought. Try to keep me down. Try to tie me, try to force me, and it won't work. So there is a note to wanting something, but not actually willing to work to that summit. Thank you, Kate. Very nicely done. All right, we've got A Cat's Purveying by Jack Blue. And Jean, how about you for that one?
Sure. A Cat's Purveying, number one, by Jack Blue. In the moonlight, moonlit bluish night, I found a purple crown afloat somewhere off the theater, like a raven's ghost patrolling from the... Wait. I'm going to erase that. Okay, here we go. A Cat's Purveying by Jack Blue. In the moonlit bluish night, I found a purple crown afloat and almost caught it, but it flew somewhere off the theater, like a raven's ghost patrolling from the unknown cemetery. Someone simply spoke to me or just meowed suddenly in the darkness full of grace, happiness, or brilliance when the pride of kittens came from behind my fantasy. They began to nobly dance, a grand pavane like a trance, wrestling with one another, or sashaying for the mother, in the lunar reveries blooming all around the trees. Morning came piano adagio, with rainbow rays eventually, on the lonely scenery, where a heap of falling leaves meowed or rustled joyfully, like the moonlit melody. And home.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you?
I enjoyed this poem. A great imagery. I love how he takes us into the magic of the night with the raven's ghost patrolling. Nice little nod to Poe there. I like how they're within the lines, they're almost kind of mythological. There's the reality of what it's like to have a cat and how they're always awake in the middle of the night. When a pride of kittens came from behind my fantasy, they began to nobly dance, a grand pavane like a trance. I don't, it's been so many years since I had a cat, but I remember, they're up in the middle of the night running around chasing ghosts. And the end stanza, morning came piano adagio with rainbow rays eventually on the lonely scene. And it kind of makes the tone different. The idea that all of a sudden, the guy is alone. But I have to say, though, that with the mention of the piano, it made me think of like the cartoon, the Aristocats. And how they would like play the piano, but this is just absolutely a delightful write. It's filled with wonder, and then it wrapped it up nicely with that hint of sadness that comes with waking up to being alone. So, very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Michael, how about you?
My name is Bo Steed. I'm Michael's roommate. Do you mind if I critique the poem?
Oh, sure.
Michael's been telling me about your group for weeks, and I didn't know you guys had a phone program. I would have joined a long time ago. But the absolute line that just took my breath away was I'll just read the whole stanza. They began to nobly dance, a grand pavane like a trance, wrestling with another or sashaying for the mother in the lunar reveries blooming all around the trees. And reveries, I had no idea it was a noun. And it completes that whole stanza. It gives this picture of a mom walking just like self-involved in the moonlight. And it just captures this essence in my mind that I could never paint on a canvas.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Jean, you got to read this. How about you?
I have to chuckle. Pam, did you say something about the Aristocats?
Yes.
Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. Yes, because I could totally relate to that when you said it. I went, yes, yes, I saw that. I remember. That was the first movie I ever saw in a theater was Aristocats. Yes, it was.
Oh, funny.
Yes, it was. Yeah. But I thought it was a great piece, and I love the references to the kittens and what have you throughout. And I thought that they kind of danced through it. You know, they weren't, it wasn't the only thought for in and scamper out. And, you know, just kind of, you know, pop their heads in and out of this poem. And I love that. It wasn't just all about, it wasn't just dead on about the kittens and the cats. But they were definitely visible and, you know, well introduced throughout. So great job, Jack. You know, I wish I could write something. I haven't written any comments tonight, so forgive me. As soon as I can get back on the computer and onto the site, I will definitely go back to tonight's show and, you know, write a little something to everybody. I don't want to be totally rude. But excellent work, and I much appreciated it. So thanks for sharing with us all. Good night, Michael. It was good to have you here. And thanks for
good night, Mike. I like the whimsy in this. It's a nice touch. If you look at that open stanza, that first stanza, especially where it hits somewhere off the theater, like a raven's ghost patrolling from the unknown cemetery, that gives me the thought of this is someone at the end of the night, the one who's left to clean up, the one who's left to put the props away, make sure the clothing and other items get put back in or hung up on hangers and put back in their proper places for the next performance. So that ghost patrol gives you that feeling of it's an ancient place. Many good actors have walked across the stage, bled their hearts out, so to speak. And then you hit the second and third stanzas, and they walk in something a little bit different. Someone simply spoke to me or just meowed suddenly in the darkness full of grace, happiness or brilliance, when a pride of kittens came from behind my fantasy. So there's that thought of him musing in the moment about everything that's gone on with this place, and he's left cleaning up, and out bounces this little trot of kittens, and that next stanza, the third one, with the grand pavane like a trance, wrestling with one another, or sashaying for the mother within the lunar reveries blooming all around the trees, gives you that perspective of something a little bit grand in the moment. And then you finish out, again, coming right back to the theater, so to speak, lonely scenery, heap of fallen leaves, meowed or rustled joyfully like the moonlit melody. So it's taking in a moment of offering or cleaning up a backstage, and he's got this little theater unfolding before him, the little cats performing their kitten dance for their mother or just for the sheer joy of being kittens and learning. What a piece. All righty. All right, Pam. This is Illegal Alien by Scott Sharp, and yes, you do have a soundtrack for this one.
Yes, I do.
Illegal Alien. The life you lead has left you searching, hoping to expatriate yourself from the love you professed, as you pledged yourself an allegiance like as if to a flag so many years ago. But now your love lies in recession, and so you look to escape like an alien to another country where you can labor and love once again. But I cannot accept you. My borders are closed, fenced off, guarded. You may tunnel. You may try to sneak over in the still of the night. but you will never be accepted as part of me.
Wow.
Great reading, Scott. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. And Pam, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I thought that was a wonderful read. You know, Scott has a great performance voice too. I really like how he used the concept of the illegal alien as an extended metaphor, and it says great social commentary, but it obviously can be taken on a very personal level, and the idea of somebody who's been hurt so often, and in their personal space invaded so often that they put up these walls and they're not willing to let anyone be a part of them. So, you know, just a really strong write all the way through and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Yeah, I thought it was a great write by Scott. I think he really, how do I want to say it? You know, I agree with Pam about the extended metaphor, but I think that the way he addressed this topic was great because he took it from like a whole different angle. It was like the invisible voice, you know, speaking as the country, more or less. You know, you may tunnel, you may try to sneak over in the still of the night, but you will never be accepted as part of me. So he's speaking as the country, you know, which is sad. It's sad. There's a whole lot of, you know, controversies and what have you. I don't want to get into the political side of it, but it definitely was well expressed in this piece. And I think that, it was a clever take on the topic. It's just a great piece, Scott, and a wonderful SoundCloud to go with. So thank you for sharing that with us for sure. Very well done. Very well done.
Well said, Jean, and you're right. I was expecting something very much different from the title, but I love how he used it as a full metaphor, hitting on that note of love and that thought of I need some space, so to speak. I need time to think. I think that's a hit on that. Where was it? Like an alien to another country, to where you can labor and love once again. It's on that note, the escape, the need to be that far away, kind of, and hits on that notion. Wow, yeah. Don't expect me to be waiting on the doorstep for you to come home, if you ever decide to come back, that is. I thought it was cleverly played out and well done. Thank you, Scott. All right, I got one more.
I have to say this. I look down in the comments, you know, underneath of the poem, and I see here where Scott says, do you realize it is actually about a married person who is trying to have an affair with the speaker? What an interesting concept. I would never pull that from there. It was very, very well buried in that, too. So nicely done, Scott. Clever. Okay, sorry, I'll shut up now because I know you have more poems.
That's all right. No, because I stay away from any ends because that kind of throws off my thoughts on it, and then I can't be honest with it, which kind of sucks.
Right, right.
So I stay away from those.
Yeah.
I
have to see them as well.
Oh, I know. I understand. But it does. Yeah. It adds a different flavor of context.
Absolutely.
Hey, Pam, you get this one.
Digging by Naomi Sarah. Digging a hole I tumble into again and again, trying to wrap around my wrists images of what is missing, weave them into a rope to hoist myself out, but only remains the lies of nothing, a shrill laughter, and it's Saturday night. I'm smoked to the filter, fallen from a window, crashing heavily to the ground. Elbows, knees, palms bloody, running towards yet another lover, who will cover my wounds in Mickey Mouse Band-Aids and poem.
Lordy, Pam, I wasn't expecting that last line that puts a bit of humor on the back end of this because it is such a sad piece. Gene, why don't we start with you?
Interesting piece, Naomi. Just really well put together. It definitely comes in from a different angle on things. Trying to wrap my wrist around images of what is missing, weave them into a rope to hoist myself out. But then that last stanza is the one that kind of ties it all together. And it's Saturday night. I'm smoked to the filter, fallen from a window, crashing heavily onto the ground. Elbows, knees, palms bloody, running towards yet another lover who will cover my wounds in Mickey Mouse Band-Aids. Just a little, surface, appeasement there. But well done, Naomi, for sure. Just a clever take on things. So, I just love the way she words things, always. And this is no exception to that. So, excellent job. And thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. Mm-hmm. All right, Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, this was definitely a strong emotive write. I like how it's about those failed attempts to save ourselves from situations and that we can't seem to get out of, those repetitive behaviors. I thought the Mickey Mouse Band-Aid was a nice touch at the end. It's the whole idea of how we go running to people to heal our emotional wounds, and they're nothing but children themselves. They're basically emotionally, they are children, and they're not the type of people that you can fry up on. And, just an excellent write and very well done.
Excellent. Thank you. You notice how this sits from the outset, digging a hole I tumble into again and again, and then trying to wrap my wrists around them, inches what is missing, weave them into rope doors. It kind of hits on that notion of digging the wrist, the trying to wrap my wrists around that long line. It kind of looks at, all right, there's that notion of pulling oneself out, yet you fall back in. And then you get that little, but only remains the lines of nothing, the shrill laughter. There's that kind of little touch of the hole squeaking a little bit tighter. And then all of a sudden, that last stanza opens wide to what is really going on. And I got a kick out of Mickey Mouse Band-Aids to finish. And you're right, Pam. It does hint at something extremely childish. As though, oh, yes, kiss my boo-boos to make them feel better. Yes, it's just another bed. Nicely done, Naomi. All right, Jean, it's closing comments for you.
Oh, my God. What a night. I got better at it as I went along. I just didn't touch anything. But it was a great show, Rex, and thank you so much for running things. Pam, thank you for handling the phones. As I said to everyone, I haven't made comments yet, but I promise I will. It might take me a little while to get back to them. And tonight at 12:30, we have Parts in a Partain with, I believe, is Aphasiana back tonight, Pam?
She is, yes.
Okay, with Aphasiana and Babbler, and probably Pam Wright, because Pam likes to keep a track of things. I don't know what the right word to say it is, but she keeps an eye on things for us. Thank heaven. And, it was a great show tonight, guys, and I appreciate you both very much. Naomi, thanks for hanging on the board. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Rick. And thank you, Michael, for calling in. It was a great night. So that's all I have to say. Rex, you want to say something? Pam, you want to say something? I appreciate you both.
Great show.
No, we're good to
go. Awesome. Awesome sauce. Thanks, guys. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night, gang.
Good night.